here. Okay. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Thursday, April 4th session of the Portland City Council. Please call the roll.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. We have one item on the calendar. Would you read that, please?
Item 300, amend Title 33, Planning and Zoning, to require parking for multi-dwelling buildings in some situations where parking currently is not required.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Obviously, we have a lot of people here. This is an issue of great concern in the community. We're going to have a hearing on the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommendations for changing parking ratios and other requirements for new multifamily buildings. This is an area where there's been policy in place for a very long time, but where things have changed to the point that there's a strong community concern that we need to adjust our rules and how we fit this new development into our neighborhoods. The Planning and Sustainability Bureau and the Commission have moved very quickly to respond to a council request that we get this issue before the City Council for action in a short time, and I appreciate that good work. So we're going to start off this afternoon with a report from Susan Anderson and Joe Zender from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Then there are some amendments that council members are interested in discussing, so we'll want to get those on the table so that people can respond and testify about both the original proposal coming from the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the amendments that are under discussion. Some of you who've been here at other City Council meetings know that I am sometimes a little indulgent about our three-minute time limit. I want to let you know that because of the number of people that are here today, I won't be indulgent and will follow that limit strictly, so please do limit your testimony. So I want to call up Susan and Joe and Howard Shapiro, who's here on behalf of the Commission, one of our Planning and Sustainability Commission members, to make the presentation, and we'll take it from there. Welcome, Howard.
So good afternoon. Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me, as the mayor indicated, is Joe Zender, Chief Planner, Matt Wickstrom, a city planner, and Howard Shapiro, Vice Chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. As the mayor indicated, we're here to propose an ordinance to require a reasonable level of off-street parking for new, somewhat large, multifamily buildings that currently do not require off-street parking. Joe will provide a brief overview of the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommendation, and he will review the amendments that have been proposed by council members. For a little bit of context, in some ways, this issue is a lot like the historic code that we brought to you just about a month ago, as these changes to the code seek to provide a relatively quick response to an issue that some see as negatively affecting the livability and quality of our neighborhoods. At the same time, we all understand that this issue is connected to a much larger sort of maze of integrated pieces related to growth and setbacks and height and the compatibility issues in our neighborhoods. And we also know that as the city's population grows, more people will want to live closer in, and our current zoning actually encourages this increased density and encourages this mix of housing uses. So, in fact, it is this mix of housing and density is what makes these neighborhoods so popular in the first place, with enough people and demand to support the shops, the restaurants, and the other services all nearby. Finally, I just want to remind you that the policies that affect issues like this, different neighborhood compatibility issues and livability issues, will absolutely be part of the comprehensive plan that we bring to you at the first of next year. And these policies will be reflected in the implementing ordinances that follow that. But for now, I think this ordinance today does provide a very reasonable and thoughtful response to the issue at hand. Joe will walk through the current proposal from the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the amendments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Joe Zender with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. The proposal that we're talking about today addresses parking minimums for new multi-unit mixed-use buildings on our commercial corridors. The issue was sparked by this the number of these buildings that have been built over the last 6 years, sort of in the last building cycle, especially in the last few years, and the concentration of some of these buildings on specifically Southeast Division, raising neighborhood concerns about impacts related to parking, but also impacts more broadly in terms of density and size and building design. Another important fact is, though, while we have no parking minimum for these buildings, more than 50% of the buildings and almost two-thirds of the units that have been built over that last six-year period have been providing parking. So the minimum is a baseline. The market decides if it's going to provide parking or not. In most cases, it has been. The policy that we're addressing here, the parking minimum policy, has a long sort of history in city policy dating back to the 80s when we first established that approach for our commercial zones and then updated in the 90s related to frequent transit streets. In response to the issues that we were hearing from the community, the Bureau conducted research and presented to that to you all in a work session earlier this year. The process that we've been through has included that work session and presentation of the results of the research hearings at the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and we're here today for a hearing in front of the City Council. The work that I just described and the proposal that went to the PSC was developed by staff from the Bureau of Planning and Planning and Sustainability, and I just wanted to recognize Matt Wexstrom and Spencer Williams and Phil Namony and Jessica Richmond, who were the team that really pulled this together, especially working on the amendment packages over the last few days. And we did it in cooperation with PBOT as well as the Bureau of Development Services. So we pulled together a team to sort of quickly assess this issue. So the package that is in front of you today is built around six amendments. But the big variables that we looked at in designing this package was asking what size buildings were most critical to address based on the concerns that the neighborhoods have expressed and also based on what we've seen in the data over the last 6 years of buildings. Bigger buildings is a target that emerged as what should be the target for our regulations. And then once we've identified that target, the second variable was what should the parking ratio be? And I'll lead you through that in the amendments. And then finally, while we would establish a minimum, our practice and our code currently has ways to buy down or substitute things that you can provide, such as bike parking, instead of providing that minimum parking. So we considered whether those substitutions were still relevant and actually came up with two new ones that we think are particularly relevant to the issue at hand. So amendment number one is where we take a look at the zones, mostly these neighborhood commercial zones and also RX and CX, to establish a new minimum parking requirement for buildings more than 40 units. That new parking requirement would be require one parking space for every four units. If you're 40 units or less under the proposal, you would retain the current minimum parking requirement, which does not require minimum parking. And these regulations only apply outside of areas where we have specific plan district regulations that already have, so they're separate sort of addressing the minimum parking requirement, such as in the Central City and Gateway. Second Amendment deals with the frequent transit street provisions that were adopted, which also currently under today's code, if you're one of those commercial zones, you have no minimum parking requirement. Also, if you're within 500 feet of a frequent transit street, you have no minimum parking requirement. So in looking at that, we made two sort of changes in the package. One is to apply the same sort of ratio and threshold that I just described to properties that are on frequent transit streets. And also, we proposed to change the definition of what constitutes a frequent transit street. Today in our code, frequent transit streets are those that have 20-minute minimum headways for bus service. The way it works is that an applicant who wants to take advantage of these provisions has to prove that the current bus schedule meets that 20-minute provision. There were some concerns that we heard in the neighborhood that they didn't believe that there were really 20-minute headways there because, you know, if you're experiencing it on the street, it doesn't seem that way sometimes. And we wanted a more sort of apparent, obvious target. So we proposed in this amendment to link the frequent transit street definition to TriMet's frequent transit service map. And that's a different standard. It's 15-minute headways, and it's an official map that they maintain. Amendment number three addresses the idea of substitutions. Currently in the code, you can reduce the number of parking spaces that are required on a site by providing bike parking, by providing motorcycle parking, and a few other provisions. In addition to those existing substitutions, the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommended that two new provisions be added. One would be to allow one parking space to be your minimum required parking to be reduced by two parking spaces, for every car share space that you produce. And then the second provision would reduce the number of parking spaces required if the development provided a bike share station. So these two provisions were designed to directly link to kind of improvements or kind of amenities that could be put on a site that might support greater or less dependence on an automobile. Part of what we're after is to have the things that you use to reduce your parking actually be proactively providing an amenity or a service that could encourage someone living in the building not to have to depend or own an automobile, not to have to park it on the street. Amendment number four. Deals with off-site parking. Currently under the code for all those zones that we just established a new threshold and a new minimum parking requirement for, if you're a commercial use and you had required parking, you can provide that off-site within 500 feet of the property. In our recommendation, we applied that same sort of option for the residential required parking that might be in those buildings. So within 500 feet of a building, if you have a permanent easement or ownership of a number of spaces, you can provide the parking that's required for your residential development off-site. Amendment number five deals with the required loading space requirements. Currently in the code, loading spaces are only required for 50 units and above, or more than 50 units. Under the recommendation, we lower that threshold to more than 40 units. Amendment number six is just to clarify the definition, sort of the space take, the physical definition of what's going to constitute long-term bike parking. In that substitution where you get to buy down or reduce the number of minimum parking spaces that you have, providing bike parking is one of those options. What we're finding is that the definition in the code now is too open-ended and that we're not getting the really high quality, what we really intended to have provided, which was secure bike parking. So we've beefed up the definition to make clear that if you're going to use that substitution, you have to provide secure bike parking of a certain dimension. That's the six amendments that we came through, and I just wanted to provide a little context on some of the big pieces. The threshold. Under the current recommendation, we are proposing for new minimum parking requirements for buildings greater than 40 units. We arrived at that 40-unit number by taking a look at the physical characteristics of how these larger buildings. They tend, the larger, and we think larger, greater than 40, we think is the threshold where you are typically one of what we're calling larger buildings. Those tend to be built on larger lots, 100 by 100. Those tend to be on the corner as well. So when you're on a corner, you have two streets by which you can provide access to whatever parking is required. So it's the a place where the impact of providing parking on the pedestrian realm and on on-street parking is most manageable. That was one of the reasons for 40 units. The second thing we did, though, as well, was took a look at how parking would typically be provided on a 100 by 100 lot. And we looked at sort of the module, how physically you might fit that parking on. You either put it on a surface lot behind the building or you tuck it under the building. And we looked at how that affected the economics of the building. Because one of the objectives of the policy is to promote transit use, to promote active transportation alternatives to owning a car. But also, there's an interest in providing a range of affordable housing. And it's not affordable housing in the sense of low and moderate income. It doesn't get to those levels. However, if you can live in an apartment and not have to pay the cost of parking spaces that have to get developed with the building, it creates a wider range of affordability for folks. So we're interested in that product, that is the apartment building without parking. When we looked at a 40-unit building, we ran some pro formas to see how it might affect the economics of the building, and we found that from 41 units and more, you were at a at a cost per square foot that was more able to absorb the cost of parking. Below that, you were going to see more significant distortions of what rents might be by adding in the cost of parking, if that makes sense. So we looked at affordability, and we found, again, a sweet spot, greater 41 units and greater, that seemed to work better and have less impacts on the potential for rents. That summarizes the package that the Planning and Sustainability Committee is a commission is forwarded to City Council.
Okay. Do you want to go ahead and describe,
yeah,
before Howard starts, the other potential amendments that you now have up?
Sure. In the intervening weeks since the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we've received a lot of testimony, as has the City Council. And in that discussion, a number of ideas have been put on the table for amendments to the approach that the Planning and Sustainability Commission has forwarded to you all. And I just wanted to summarize those ideas so that people have the opportunity to address those as they testify today. If any of these sort of amendments or enough of these amendments are added to the package, what we will do between now and the next City Council meeting on this is to prepare a substitute ordinance that incorporates whatever amendments the City Council wants to ask us to move forward for your voting next time and amend the findings that support that. Six amendments are on the have been discussed over the last few weeks. One is to take a different approach to the threshold and the parking ratio, which is to where we set it from for buildings greater than 40 units. This would be a tiered approach that would add in one space for every 5 units ratio for buildings that are between 31 and 40 units. One space per every 4 units, which is what the PSC recommended, for buildings that are 41 to 50 units, and then one space per 3 units for buildings that are 51 and greater. So you get a higher parking ratio for the larger buildings. You reach down a little bit to the 30-unit buildings create a minimum parking requirement where the current proposal does not have that. And in that decision, there are some trade-offs about affecting the affordability of that sort of category of building from 31 to 40. There's concerns about whether or not those are ripe targets for mid-block infill development. We don't see very many of those buildings over the last 6 years. It's interesting that most of the buildings and most of the units produced are from 40 and 41 and greater, or in that 20 to 1 sort of range. There's something about the 30 sort of range that changes the economics. Second amendment deals with the definition of frequent transit street. You recall that we went with the proposal to go with the Metro or the TriMet designation. But when you do that, if you recall that map I showed, there's a lot of properties that currently have zero minimum parking requirements that will have that taken off as a right, and they will go to what the base code provides. So if you're a CG property, so a general commercial property that used to be on a transit street that no longer is, your parking ratio jumps to one space per unit. So it's a dramatic increase from zero. And if you're an RH, which is high density residential, your parking ratio jumps from one space to 2 units. Once again, a dramatic jump. And so this amendment is coming from an acknowledgement that in even our PSC discussions on this, that was not so fully vetted. There may be some unintended consequences, and the conservative approach would be just to keep it the way it is today monitor the impacts. Second addition to the definition of frequent transit street is to make clear that currently it's 500 feet from a frequent transit street. That can include your max lines, but when you think about a max line, it's really the station, not the line itself, where you actually have access to transit, and you should want to have a consideration for how you address parking. So this would say that a 1,500-foot radius around the station area is where the new thresholds, whatever they be, either the 40 and above or the 41 unit and above that we proposed or the amended one I just talked about would apply. Number three currently deals with the substitutions. The current proposal added two substitutions. There's already three on the books. And each of those substitutions says that there's a maximum amount that you can use the individual substitution to reduce your amount of parking. Typically, it's like 25%. But you could conceivably, theoretically, stack a bunch up and eliminate almost all of your parking. This amendment puts in sort of a safety net that says any combination of the substitutions can never go below go over reducing your parking by 50%. Number four is specifically related to the offsite parking option, and this amendment would take that out of the proposal and leave it the way it is today, which is where offsite parking options are not allowed. The Planning and Sustainability Commission actually discussed this specifically, and their reasoning went this way. One of the fears with allowing parking to be provided off-site is that you've created an incentive to tear down buildings or maintain surface lots in our business cores, and you don't want that. We don't want that. The Planning and Sustainability Commission, in examining this, also saw, though, a benefit from having off-site parking, which would be, as I said, most buildings today and most units today are being provided but with parking. And on average across the city, it's almost one space per unit. So now and or in the future, it's very likely that we're going to have a situation where there are spaces in a building that are being underutilized. This would allow a building within 500 feet to use those spaces. So you're really optimizing the amount of parking, that the utilization of the parking that is provided. That was the PSC's reasoning for putting it in. And as I said, the countervailing concern is that the market will, surface parking lots will proliferate around our commercial cores. The PSC felt that the market, the value of the land, would make that not happen very much, so they balanced it differently than this amendment does.
Joe?
Yeah.
If somebody is taking advantage, if there were an offsite parking option and a property owner is taking advantage of that, and then somehow the offsite parking disappears, what happens to the property owner that was relying on that? What's the enforcement mechanism?
Great. And the parking requirement and the spaces that are identified have to be an easement or ownership. That's what you have to show to get that checked off at BDS. That parking goes away. The building is no longer in compliance. With a complaint, we have a complaint-based system, but that complaint would make the building owner have to come back into compliance. And there's really two paths. One is to find parking somewhere else that meets the parking requirement, or to go through a new land use review process to get an adjustment. So either way, you're put into the enforcement mechanism of the city. I may have created a little confusion yesterday when I was briefing City Council about there's a separate sort of thing that's the non-conforming situation. That's not what this is. This would be out of compliance with the zoning regulations, and you'd have to come into compliance.
And does that mean they're subject to fines or something if they don't come into compliance?
They would be.
Okay.
Or they could be.
Yeah, subject to fines, subject to other enforcement. It's a ratcheting up enforcement system. Okay, where are we? We're down to number five. Number five adds a new sentence to the purpose statement for the whole ordinance. And this sentence makes clear that the purpose of creating this minimum for off-street parking is to address the on-street parking needs for residents, for guests to the district, and for disabled. What the purpose statement, how that's used in the code, is that if there's an adjustment, that's what BDS goes and looks to see, to really understand criteria by which they're going to evaluate whether or not to give an adjustment. It makes the case that we need to keep our eye on the needs of disabled parking on street as well in considering those kind of adjustments.
Are you also on the site?
On site, yes.
Yeah, as well as on the street.
Yes, yes. Both right adjustments on in either case. And then number six is an amendment that would clarify the main entrance requirement for ground floor uses. And this one is pertinent to the situation that was recently subject of LUBA action regarding the property at 37th and Division. LUBA interpreted
a provision that we have that says that uses on that street, ground floor uses on, or uses that face the main street, have to have active entrances, provide entrances to all of those uses. When we wrote this code a number of years ago, the intent was to have active ground floor uses, be they commercial or be they residential, but you're going to have doors, people coming in and out. It adds to the life of the district. LUBA, in their interpretation of what potentially was our unclearly written code, was that it also pertained to upstairs uses, the residential uses, and that's what they used to send the permit back, the building permit back. That was not the intention of that code in the first place. There's lots of multi-use, mixed-use buildings that are built citywide. So we need to clarify this so that other buildings are not caught in that situation where there's a discouragement of active ground floor commercial uses. So this amendment would go back in and clarify that language.
Great. Questions for Planning Sustainability Bureau staff? And then if not, I want to give Commissioner, Planning and Sustainability Commissioner Shapiro a chance to speak.
Welcome. Good afternoon. It's the first chance I've had to say, Mr. Mayor, new and renewed and relived council members. I'm Howard Shapiro, the Vice Chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. I don't need to tell you that parking is an emotional issue for all of us. Just the other day, visiting at City Hall, and a very delightful visit, I came back to my car and I had a ticket. I got really emotional, so everybody can understand that. My purpose today is to try to highlight this five-paragraph letter that we sent along to you, abetted by the very, very elegant testimony you just heard from Mr. Zender and Ms. Anderson. We based an awful lot of these five paragraphs on the good, elegant, and careful work of the group that we work for, of the Planning Sustainability Group. So the letter very much endorses everything that we've put before you, with the exception of these amendments, which we have not seen nor have we commented on. They all seem reasonable to me, but I'm only one of nine votes. So in the letter that we sent along to you, 7-1, we forwarded the new apartments and parking proposed zoning code amendments. And the highlights of that I want to point out to you, that we view this package of amendments as an initial approach to address the immediate concern, while a more holistic and long-term policy direction is developed through the comp plan. In other words, we want to do this, and we want to do it in a timely fashion, but we also want to study it very carefully and more completely as we take up the comp plan. So the comp plan is what we look to as the long term. This is what we think is an elegant solution for the present. We also request that the code align more tightly with TriMet's frequent service. That makes a great deal of difference in the way parking works in the city, and the high capacity transit lines as well. Commissioner Smith will be along to add his own flavorful comments to that case later on in the testimony. And in addition, we request the City Council direct the Bureau of Transportation to continue to explore the neighborhood parking permit program. It's another part of this whole conundrum that the comp plan needs to take on. In general, I want to be clear that we heard very balanced testimony. As I say, this is an emotional issue, and so I took the trouble to give you some maybe interesting, but I think important statistics. 35 people showed up at the hearing and testified on one side or the other of the issue. We received over 50 pieces of written testimony, and I would say that over 100 people were there at the hearing on both sides of the issue. In our view, while it was very fervored and very emotional, it was balanced. So the conclusion we came to as a group, 7-1 as it were, is that this letter, this proposal, and this resolution is a good and timely thing for you to pass along. The six amendments that come along in addition to that are all grist for your mill, and I'm sure will add to the flavor of this resolution when you get it done. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Questions for anyone here?
Well, I just have one question, and that's there's several allusions to we're going to look at this again in the comp plan. I mean, can't what we do next week be sufficient solution for the comp plan, at least on this microcosm of an issue?
I think the main issue is that this part of it is pretty much settled, but there is a much bigger issue looking at height and building, you know, setbacks and all the other compatibility issues that this fits into. So I think this part, my guess will be, you know, there might be a little tweaking of this somewhere down the road as part of the comp plan when we come back, but I don't see us wholesale changing any of this, as part of the comp plan when we come through with that. I mean, over time, we could look at it again, you know, several years from now, but we're trying to get this piece done, but it really does fit in with the whole neighborhood compatibility issues, and we'll bring all of that to you as part of the comp plan.
And as I said, you know, we developed this package in close consultation with PBOT and the Bureau of Development Services. And in working with the Bureau of Transportation, there's an interest there to do some more ongoing monitoring of how on-street parking in our centers, because the idea of these neighborhood centers is a big idea that's coming in the new comp plan, how that actually works. So we have better information. We did a small study here to try to get a sense of what this issue is. But it's worth, you know, having a better sense of how on-street parking works, the same way that we have a good sense about how traffic capacity works.
Further questions? Great. Thank you all.
Thank you.
So I think it might be appropriate at this point for, okay, Joe, we might want to keep you handy, sorry, because I think it might be appropriate at this point for council members to propose amendments, including the ones that were just described, so that when people testify, they know what's on the table in front of us.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. On the cheat sheet, I come first. So I'm going to move the first amendment that Joe mentioned that would substitute the BPS proposal for a three-tiered proposal. Amendment number one, and I'll just briefly describe it, Mayor. When we received the thoughtful recommendation of planning, what we heard from was, predictably, understandably, a lot of people who thought it didn't go far enough, others who thought it went too far. As we drilled down a little bit, I became convinced that there were two changes which we ought to consider. One is to lower the floor from 40 units to 30 units. We just lost it. Okay. Which is creates the first tier. I guess we lost it again.
There we go.
It's back. And that's reflected in the first of the three tiers. And then to create a new tier of 50 units and above. The concern, obviously, in dropping down is to capture more of the development that's actually happening. The concern at the higher end is with the concentration. We looked at a number of different options to address the concern that happens when you have lots of buildings in a concentrated area. So the cumulative impact is greater than any single building. And so that was the thinking between the three tiers. And then we adjusted the ratios, accepting the planning's recommendation of 1-4 at the 40 to 50 unit, making it more stringent above 50. That would go to 3-1, and slightly less stringent below 40, between 30 and 40 at 1-5. Our effort is to strike a balance between the sustainability aspirations of the city and the livability considerations through the prism of what's actually going on in the street and actual experience. So I move this amendment.
Great. Thank you. Is there a second? Okay. That amendment is moved and seconded. We're going to put these all on the table and take action on them at the end of the hearing. So next amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to move a few of the amendments. The second, if we can keep going back to this. Thank you. That's great. The second amendment, I move to amend the recommended draft to require parking near transit using the tiered approach. Wait a minute. That's the second one. Sorry. That's the same.
Yeah.
Within move to amend the recommended draft to require sites within 1,500 feet of light rail stations to provide parking under the same regulations.
Okay. Is there a second to that?
Well, does your amendment address the frequent transit TriMet map or not?
It's proposed as a separate amendment. So what the effect of this is to say that these requirements will be in effect on transit streets as well as on non-designated transit streets. Is that right, Joe?
Well, actually, yeah. If we're looking at the memo that we sent over as the motion guide, if we're talking about what Commissioner Fritz just proposed as item 2B,
mm-hmm.
And so that would, in that one, create this area where you apply the new parking ratios within 1,500 feet of the MAC station.
But we also have item 2A there.
2A really rolls back our definition, keeps our definition of frequent transit street the way it's in the code today, and does not go with what was proposed in the PSC recommendation to limit it to the TriMet designated frequent service lines, which is a different standard entirely.
So moved, and for the reasons that Joe specified in his earlier presentation, and also because the map can change, the transit frequency can change, and the planner at the permit center needs to check that there actually is frequent transit, not just that the map in 2013 said that there was frequent transit.
So you're moving 2A and 2B.
Correct.
And then if we could just complete the package, if you flip it over, 2C.
2C is the map.
Okay. It just says don't use the map.
To amend the recommended draft to remove the current TriMet frequent services map from the commentary and the draft zoning code.
Thank you.
Second. So, and that's a seconded. So that one's on the table. Just again to clarify, to make sure both we and the public understand what we're talking about here. The effect of that package of amendments is to say that these tiered parking requirements will apply in all cases, and that the TriMet map of frequent service will not provide an exemption from that requirement.
Correct.
I got that right?
Correct. Well, yeah, and it will apply to any street that's got 20-minute bus service, which is the city code's definition, or 20-minute transit service, which is the city code's definition of frequent transit street, which is that's the definition it is today.
It's the same as we have today, except for the adding the 1,500 feet from the transit.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And
so
just to clarify,
if you're within 1,500 feet, then you're exempt.
Two things. Yeah. There's a if you're on a frequent transit street, if you're 500 feet from a frequent transit street defined as a street with 20-minute transit service, the tiered provisions would apply, the parking minimums that we're changing with this would apply there. Today, that within 500 feet, you have no parking minimum. You all are establishing a parking minimum through a tiered proposal, and we're just applying it to those same properties. PSC's recommendation reduced the number of streets and properties that would have been eligible for that. You're keeping it the same with this amendment because of unintended consequences that I'd say that we didn't really hash through when we did ours.
So the effect is no street is exempt?
No street is exempt. The map or what constitutes places where that tiered approach will be, the minimum parking tiered approach will be available, stays as it is today. With the one exception of...
So I'm still unclear. If you're within 1,500 feet of a transit station...
The one exception of, rather than, say, within... Today it would be if you're 500 feet from a transit line,
Right.
It becomes, no, not that, but 1,500 feet from a transit station.
Okay.
If that makes sense. There are more nodes than this line that you really can't have access to. And I can show you the map if that would help.
I'm still not sure if I'm following you, Joe. In terms, not in terms of the map, but... Are the effect, I thought when I read this, that the effect of the council action on this amendment would be to say we're not granting an exemption based on your distance to a station or to a transit street.
Not from this code, from these
from
minimum.
From the new code.
Right.
From our, if we adopt these proposed amendments, all streets will be subject to the requirement.
Correct.
Do I have that correct?
Correct.
Okay. That's I wanted to make sure that
yes, no, it, that's correct, Mayor.
So there won't be an exemption based on your location.
Correct.
Okay.
Other than your radius from a transit.
No.
Well, that's what parking standards apply. These are lesser parking standards still than in the rest of the city. So it's just specifying.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me do one more run, because I really want to be clear about it. Today, you can have no minimum parking requirement if you're one of those C zones that I showed.
Right.
Or if you're 500 feet from a transit street. What the package is doing is changing that minimum parking requirement from zero to a tiered approach. And it will apply to those C zones, and it will apply to the current map of transit street, which is and the properties 500 feet from that transit street, plus properties that are 1,500 feet from a MAC station. So you get the minimum parking requirement you're trying to impose on the C zones, you're just also doing that
to your transit streets and your MAC stations.
Okay. I want to restate my point just to make sure that we all get it,
yes, sir,
me included, and that is no street is exempt.
Right. If exempt means having no minimum parking requirement, no street is exempt. Correct. That's what I thought you were saying. Sorry.
So you're accepting that as an amendment.
So that amendment has been moved and seconded and is on the table for the council to consider and for people to testify about.
Just to clarify that this is so that you know what we're thinking so that you can say that's a good thing, that's a bad thing.
Okay.
The third item, I don't believe we actually need to amend to move not to amend the language in the recommended GRI.
Correct.
That's correct.
So we will move to what's in 3B in our cheat sheet, which is to amend the recommended draft to cap the amounts of required parking that may be reduced during using the exceptions to 50%. So in other words, you can use any of the five or six now options, but you can't get below 50% of the required parking.
So by providing bike parking or... Mm-hmm.
Bike,
car
trees,
share,
car share.
Those kinds of things. You can reduce your requirement, but under this proposed amendment, it would not be reducible by more than half.
If I may, I'm going to support this amendment, but also with the understanding that between now and the work on the comp plan, I've asked the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to look at more ways to use the bonus system, in other words, voluntary mechanisms to get true affordability in some of these buildings, because the reality is there's very little affordability, in quotes, and we're also not seeing much in the way of Todd tax abatement. So I've asked to have an exploration of whether we can tie any of the bonuses to actually getting a percentage of the units in these buildings that are affordable to entry-level workers and working-class families. So.
Okay. That one is moved and seconded.
So I move to amend the recommended draft from the Planning Commission to delete the language that allows parking for multi-dwelling buildings to be within 500 feet of the building. This is much broader than just these transit streets. This would be citywide, and that's something that needs to be discussed in the comp plan rather than done as part of this package of amendments. So this keeps the current code, which requires parking to be on the same site as the building for residential development.
Okay. That's been moved. Is there a second for that amendment?
I mean, I'll second for purposes of discussion and testimony.
One more.
Thank you.
And then I think it's just...
purpose statement.
Keeping the current code, which
5A.
Allows for joint use parking. And again, both of these issues are things that should be looked at in the comp plan. So we don't need to amend that. We do need to amend the purpose statement to add that multi-dwelling development that includes a large number of units may require some parking to ensure that there is an adequate supply of on-street parking for existing and future uses in the area and to provide necessary and adequate parking for residents and guests, especially those with disabilities.
That's supposed to include off-street as well.
Yeah, I have a question about that. I think that might be either unclear language or a typo. Do we really mean on-street or do we mean on and off-street there?
It's both, according to the... The language makes the adjustment
provide,
if you look at both.
Yeah. So, and to provide necessary and adequate parking.
Right.
That.
This is the purpose statement for having on-site parking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
So, when in adjustment review, if a developer.
No, but this says on-street, not on-site, Amanda.
I know, but this is the section of the zoning code that we're amending. It's the purpose statement for parking on-site.
You could read it. The on-street provision, the future uses in the area provision, and this one that the commissioner just added. It could be clear that just if we, but it the way it's structured is it's both on-street and off-street.
Okay. It would not be better to simply delete the words on-street?
It would be perfectly fine to do that.
I would be fine with that.
All right, I'll accept my own friendly amendment. And put that
friendlier.
Oh, excellent. We're moving right along. And then I move to amend the transit street main entrance requirement to specify that this means only for the non-residential portion so that you don't have to have 12 front doors on the transit street if you happen to have 12 residential units.
Second.
And this, again, is something that needs to be looked at the comp plan. Ideally, you would want one front door for the residential units on the transit street so that the people who live in the apartments can easily get to transit. We looked at how we could do that in the short time frame and decided that it would be better done in the comp plan process.
Okay. That amendment is on the table as well. Okay. So I hope that's something that people were able to follow and that we might be helpful, Joe, to leave that slide up of the proposed amendments so that as people testify, they'll be able to refer to those if they'd like to. Thanks, Carla. And with that, I don't believe we have any more invited testimony. We can open it up again. I'm going to be a little more strict than usual because of the number of people here and ask you to confine your testimony to a three-minute period. So let's start with the sign-up sheet, please.
We have 59 people signed up to testify. The first four, please come on up, are Joe Vanderveer, Aaron Brown, Tony Jordan, and Terry Parker. They'll be followed by Ted Labby, Ruben Drumling, Alan Field, and Michael Robinson.
All right, welcome. Oh, there we go. Thank you very much. Would you like to go first? Go ahead. Looks like she's got you wired up there.
All right. I'm Joe Vanderveer, and I'm with the Commission on Disability.
One sec. We
actually Joe, she's got to switch your mic on.
Yeah. We're good now.
You got it? Okay. I'm Joe Vanderveer, and I'm with the Commission on Disability. And I first wanted to say welcome to Mayor Hill and Commissioner Novick to the council, and we look forward to working with you in the future. I'm going to give you some comments from our commission on amendment number 5, not the new amendments, but the original amendments that we're talking about regarding loading zones. First, since the provision of loading zones is vital for paratransit, taxi and wheelchair adaptive vehicle pickup and drop off of residents, we would ideally like to see loading zones on all developments, but we, regardless of size, but we do realize that that's may not be feasible on smaller developments. So we would propose a threshold of 20 units or greater than 20 units for loading zones. Second, we would like to see it put in the code that loading zones should be placed as close to the main entrance as possible. To the development of the building for purposes of accessibility and paratransit usage. And third, we would also like to see it put in the code that it is vital that the loading zones be on the right side of vehicles, so be on the right side of the street in situations where you have a one-way street. That's essential because that's the side of the vehicle that equipment deploys on, and so left side would obviously be deploying people into the street, and so that's a serious safety issue for us. Then finally, I just want to add an additional comment on the availability. Given the availability and distribution of accessible housing, given that that's a primary concern for our commission, we have reservations as to what the effect of this zero parking ordinance will be on and the attempt to minimize the cost of development will actually be on people with disabilities as far as the accessible housing that's developed under these policies. We'd like to see some provision made in the code somewhere to incentivize or to assure that accessible housing will be developed, because if we encourage smaller developments of 20, 30 units, that's very likely not going to be accessible units. And they may cut costs by not having elevators and things like that, which would not help the situation that we're facing right now.
Great. So. Great. Thanks very much. And thanks to you and the other commission members for giving us guidance. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Aaron Brown, and I live at 4047 North Michigan. I am the co-secretary of the Boys Neighborhood Association, and I serve as a citizen on the network's policy expert group, which is currently reviewing the comprehensive plan Today I'm speaking as a private citizen interested in policy for affordable housing, transportation, and neighborhoods for current and future Portlanders. I am here today to testify against any increase in regulation mandating automobile parking and explicitly against Commissioner Fish's proposed amendments to lower the minimums that mandate expensive automobile parking spaces and new housing construction to buildings with 30 units. I don't see why the City of Portland feels the need to enact legislation to ensure that whatever dwelling I choose to live in has access to 160 square feet of asphalt for me to park an automobile that I may or may not own, forcing me to purchase or rent a unit of housing that comes attached with a parking space of up to $55,000 seems antithetical to the city's goals when reduction of private automobile use has repeatedly been stated by the city as a priority as part of our plans to help us save the earth, save our wallet, save our air quality, and save at least my ever-expanding waistline. Forcing developers to build a housing stock that includes built-in parking stifles the market and heavily discourages folks to consider living car-free by explicitly asking them to subsidize other residents' choice to own a car. This is problematic, considering many folks are willing to forego owning an automobile as a trade-off to live in these amenity-filled neighborhoods. I also want to point out that much of the pro-parking regulation testimony that you've received from citizens does not necessarily represent the interests and needs of a full cross-section of Portland's residents. After sitting through a combined 6 hours of testimony at the two Planning and Sustainability Committee meetings, I was the only identified renter to testify, although 46% of Portland's residents rent. Make no mistake, the increased regulations will make it more expensive and more difficult to build cheap units in transit-friendly, amenity-filled neighborhoods. This limitation on the supply of housing will exacerbate our already astoundingly low 3% vacancy rate, which is part of the reason that rents in these new buildings are so high in the first place. As far as I can tell, I was also one of only two people under the age of 35 to testify during these 6 hours of meetings. The decision to strongly mandate the construction of expensive automobile parking on housing has significant implications for what Portland's housing stock will look like in 2025. As someone currently between the ages of 20 and 25, this concerns me. I am the person in this room who will be hopefully luckily enough to be able to choose what kind of housing unit I want to live in and what kind of a neighborhood I want to live in those years. I may want a unit with built-in parking. I may want to do without. I want to be able to make that choice so that I can spend as much or as little of my future income on housing versus transportation as fits the needs of my future family. Your decision today may threaten my ability to make that choice. I want to stress that I empathize and respect with the wisdom of other community members who have testified at some of the Planning Commission meetings, and I want to firmly state that I'm not here to shill for developers interested in making a grand fortune at the expense of our famed, heavily curated neighborhoods. I implore you to avoid making this hasty decision that will threaten housing affordability, access to neighborhoods, and transportation options for current and future Portlanders. I encourage you through the comprehensive plan to pursue policy that encourages parking permits in desirable neighborhoods, as it is a more cost-effective policy outcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Hales and Commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Tony Jordan. I'm a board member of the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association and the Land Use Chair. I'm not speaking for the SNA, but I am a member of Portland Neighbors for Sustainable Development, and I'm the other member under 35 that spoke. The amendments proposed by the Planning and Sustainability Commission will slow or suspend residential development along our close-in transit and commercial corridors. We've waited many years for these streets to grow up, and it's unfortunate that fear and uncertainty are likely to derail this transformation, which is essential for the long-range plans of Portland. While current residents will continue to enjoy subsidized storage of their vehicles on the street, renters will continue to compete for briefly vacant apartments in an ever-tightening market. The adjustments proposed by Commissioner Fish will only exacerbate this effect. It is true that brand new development may not be cheap to live in, but high school economics teach us that increasing supply relative to demand will bring down prices overall. There is a perverse incentive at play for developers to offload the cost of residential parking on nearby neighborhoods. The same incentive convinces homeowners to convert garages to offices and to keep additional vehicles. Innovative residential permit programs will ensure that adequate parking remains available without creating a glut of just below threshold buildings designed around these regulations. We should roll up our sleeves and begin the difficult work of converting the parking commons to a managed public resource. Those of us who had hoped for a reasonable discussion of this proposal have watched in some dismay as a series of reactive actions have turned this into an emotionally charged debate with little time for reasoned arguments. This decision should not have been fast-tracked with 2 weeks' notice, one of which was spring break, to stop development in 37th and Division. If that's successful, it will send a shiver down the spines of all developers and not just the unpopular ones, and may expose the city to damaging litigation. If that's not the motivation, I don't understand what the rush was. The PSC recommendations are a compromise, and they are designed to curb the most egregious, to curb abuses of the current exemptions. It would be one thing to move very quickly to pass the PSC recommendations, but the adjustments proposed are not just minor tweaks. If you must take action, please pass the PSC recommendations with amendments 2 and 6 only. Thank you.
Welcome.
Good afternoon.
You're on. You're on.
Good afternoon. My name is Terry Parker. I'm a fourth generation Portlander speaking for myself. Imploding with debt, management costs ballooning, and transit fares that barely cover 25% of the operating cost, TriMet is on the edge of insolvency. Without major changes, the deteriorating transit agency will have to cut 70% of its bus service by 2025. Likewise, bicycling doesn't generate any tax revenue to pay for infrastructure, yet the costly social engineering continues. The notion that everybody will ride a bike, take transit, or even commute by transit is a mythical, unsustainable fantasy world that lacks a financial reality check. 80% of the trips in Portland are made by car. 70% plus of the tenant households in the new apartment buildings without parking have one or more cars, and two-thirds of those cars are parked on the street. Using city streets as a storage lot for these cars decreases the value of neighboring homes and businesses, thereby creating a transfer of wealth from the nearby property owners to the developer and renters. The reason behind the application of parking minimum requirements is to ease the burden on the existing street network from the arrival of fresh demand created by new developments. Implementing a fee-based on-street parking permit system as a mitigation measure is not only an attempt to ration demand, but it also discriminately places the burden of fresh demand on the existing residents and businesses rather on the developers that create it. The proposed zoning code amendments that recommends only 0.25 parking places per unit as a minimum for structures with 40 units or more is a watered-down, feel-good approach that just puts lipstick on a pig. Consider the cumulative effect of several of these apartment buildings without parking or with only 0.25 spaces per unit being constructed in close proximity to each other. Forcing alternative lifestyles and the kind of social engineering agenda that allows developers to construct new apartments, buildings without adequate parking spreads the plague of the Northwest Portland parking mess to the east side. Developers need to accept the responsibility for any fresh demand for parking. The zoning code amendments need to reflect the reality check of today and be adjusted to require 0.75 parking places per unit for any new east side multi-unit residential development. Parking minimum requirements need to accommodate the majority of tenants with cars while minimizing the on-street impact for the existing residents and businesses. In today's modern world, the family car represents the true meaning of democratic freedom and mobility. History clearly demonstrates higher rates of personal mobility significantly contribute to greater economic productivity, which in turn generates higher income jobs. None of us can project the future. The energy sources and propulsion systems of the automobiles of tomorrow may not even be on the drawing boards of day. Today, even if in decades to come, personal mobility drastically changes and the number of households owning cars radically declines, the smart and logical thing to do is to lessen the negative impacts of today by requiring adequate off-street parking minimums, but design that space so that it can be converted to other uses in the distant tomorrows. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you all.
The next four are Ted Labby, Ruben Demling, Alan Field, and Michael Robinson, and they'll be followed by Kathy Lammer, Brian Posewitz, Eli Spivak, and Gary Davenport.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Ted Labby, and I represent DPAVE, a Portland nonprofit. Mayor and City Council, thank you for the opportunity to comment today. Today, you're going to hear an earful from angry neighborhood activists on why new apartment buildings should have on-site parking. I am here to urge you to do nothing. Let's simply stick with Portland's current zoning code provisions. There's not sufficient time for me to detail how the city's current approach is good for efficient urban land use, affordable housing choices and access, interactive and business-friendly streetscapes, bike, ped, and transit mobility, green spaces and water quality preservation, and how it moves the city towards greater resiliency in the face of shifting climate regimes. But it does all of these things and more. Unfortunately, you are under tremendous political pressure to do something, and I think the city staff have found a reasonable set of code changes that will minimize the damage to Portland's progressive vision. Please don't roll back things any further with these amendments. I would clarify that I do support Amendment 2, which keeps the current high-frequency transit map. I like that. There's much talk about equity these days. Let's talk a little bit about equity. All three hearings, including this one on the proposed zoning code changes, have been held during weekday working hours, spread over the period of 4.5 months, with no effort to garner input from folks beside those willing and able to attend these hearings. Today, the people you are hearing from are overwhelmingly white, middle to upper class, and own